Hello and welcome to our Clinical Mastery of the Digestive System call. It's a case study review and Q&A and open coaching and basically here for you in whatever aspect you need me, whether it's answering questions about a particular case, answering questions about your content, or reviewing a particular case. Looks like Lindsay submitted a case and we're going to get to that in a moment. So you all have the ability to apply for certification, and we've already had a couple of people who've gone through and finished their certification. And one of the things that you do to get a certification is you have to show us that you're clinically ready to work with people. Like, we want you to be at a point where we feel really confident that you say you're a graduate and a certified digestive mastery coach and that you know what you're doing. And, you know, a lot of you already know what you're doing, and that's, it makes it easy for you. But one of the things that we have you do is to do a case and a case submission. So you do a case, you actually record it on the phone, right? If you're on the phone with somebody, or you read it in and you present the case to us. And Lynn and Jan on my team, you've all met Lynn, some of you have met Jan, they review them. And then I do the final approval, and then you get a certification. So you have to pass all the tests at the end of each module. And those tests are really helpful because it helps you to see if you missed anything while you were studying it. So I would highly recommend that as you're going through, even if you don't plan to apply for a certification, is that you complete the test at the end of the module. In the future, we're probably going to open the calls up or the content up so that you go through one and then the next and then the next. And then once you finish the test in one, you go to the next one. We haven't quite set it up that way, but we're perfecting the technology before we pass it on to all of the programs. So I just want to speak briefly to collecting a case, like really asking lots of questions. So a lot of you come from diverse backgrounds. Some of you have been homeopaths, naturopaths, some of you are nutrition coaches through various kinds of training, and some of you have had a lot of experience. Some of you are medical doctors, chiropractors, and you've had a lot of training in taking a good history from somebody. And some of you have been in practice in medicine and maybe haven't had quite the practice with that because of the system, the way it works these days, is that you get, you know, the 10, 15 minute visit with someone and you don't really get to get into it. And that's the biggest complaint I hear from people who come to us and come to me in the programs, is that they're frustrated that there's not a lot of listening going on and there's not a lot of asking going on for really getting to the root of what's going on with them. So I'm a big fan of a comprehensive evaluation, regardless of what they come to you for. This program is the digestive, mastery of the digestive system, but it's mastery of the digestive system because the digestive system is the core of a lot of other problems. So you may be working with people who come to you and say they have a problem with SIBO or parasites or bloating and gas and other symptoms of digestive upset, but you also might be working with somebody who comes in complaining about fatigue or muscle aches, fibromyalgia, other sorts of issues that may at the surface not seem to be digestive related for them, but then you keep digging back. On our NEPT call today, one of our practitioners who's been with us for a while, she basically said she had somebody come in and she came to see her because of thyroid. She had some thyroid issues and went through some whole stuff about that. But as she went through, she realized this person really had some serious underlying digestive issues. So she switched gears with the person, not so much like, I'm not going to work on your thyroid. It's like, you came to me because you want to be well, and the thyroid is what's at top of mind for you. But it doesn't appear to be top of the barrel. I think a lot of the problems you've had with your thyroid over the years and why you're on medication and why you've had surgery and whatnot is because there's some underlying problems that haven't been addressed. And the roots were digestive and blood sugar. So it's not always going to present as a digestive case. So you really want to learn how to do a comprehensive history. And one of the things I've given as a bonus gift to, in many times, many places, probably as part of the lead up to this class, but if I haven't, I'll tell you where you can go get it, is a 3-page thing, which is the clinical mastery of a history, right? All the different components that you want to be thinking about, not necessarily asking each person every time if it's apparently not making sense, but all the different aspects of that history. And then from there, you can create your own intake form that people will fill out that will focus you in on where the issues lie. So if you're interested in that, I think it was in some of the lead up free materials we gave. If not, if you can't find it easily, you can download it when you go to nutritionalendocrinology.com. It's part of what we call our practice success kit. And it's this mastery of the clinical history. In our NEPT program, we have a module that's probably 12 hours long that goes through all the different components of that and gives you sample questionnaires and all that you can do and use with your people and how to really direct the history so that you get at the cause of it, of things. And so we've focused in this program on assessment of the digestive system, but also on assessment of the nutrient status. So that's the stuff that you're going to use over and over and over again with people. So I highly recommend that you use some of those questionnaires to craft your own. You may want to, for a while, use copies of mine. We've given you some of that in the Done For You. But I would highly recommend that you customize, because you may find that, you know, you're getting a certain kind of people that are coming in. Maybe you're getting mostly entrepreneurs and professional CEOs and stuff, and they have this whole stress component that you need to be addressing or at least asking them about, and you'll update your questionnaires. Maybe the languaging will be changed if you're talking to a male population versus a female versus an athlete population, etc. So you're welcome to use those and create your own, or you're welcome to use them as is, of course. And we give you that stipulation in the Done For You section of the program. But here's the thing. It's important that you ask lots of questions. And so I'm going to model that with the cases that I go through. And I have already modeled that, because sometimes one question leads you to ask another question. And the answer to that question leads another one, which you may not have thought of in your comprehensive questionnaire. You can't ask everything. So you have the most, you know, fundamental questions that give you the most comprehensive look-see. And then from there, you're going to be going and straying in different directions. And the more you understand how this stuff works, the easier it is for you to say, oh, that symptom, that might mean this. And then you go down that path. And for example, in the digestive, when you're asking a question about bloating, for example, you may say, or burning, for example, you may say, well, when does it come on? And they say, well, it comes on after I eat. Okay, well, how long after you eat? Is it immediately after you eat? Is it within an hour? Is it within a couple of hours? And when you understand the physiology of the way the digestive tract works, you can kind of guesstimate where the food is by the time it's causing the problem. If it's an immediate problem, it's probably something that's happening in the stomach. Right? Because the stomach is where the food goes immediately. If it's a burning or if it's a pain, right? So, and if it comes on like in the middle of the night when they're laying down, you're starting to think, oh, maybe it's a reflux situation. Because when they lay down, if the sphincter is loose, the contents of the stomach is going to go up into the esophagus, right? And so is it accompanied by a sore throat? Maybe thinking of reflux, even if they're not complaining about burning in the stomach. They may just have some gas, bloating, whatever, but they've got this sore throat or cough that they can't get rid of. So I want you to learn how to ask the questions. So what we're going to do tonight on this call is we're going to go through Lindsay's case. And I still, is Lindsay on the phone? Raise your hand, Lindsay, because I want to make sure. Yeah, Jay Whiteman, there you are. I want to make sure that she's on because I want to ask her questions. And so model this. Now, if you want to come to one of these calls with yourself as the patient, go for it. Because here's the thing. I can model the questionnaire process better if it's you, right? Because I can ask questions and then you're going to know the answers and then I may have other questions and I may have other comments. If it's your client, as I go through this with Lindsay or with whoever else submits a case, I'm going to be telling you where I see holes in the case, where you need to go back and ask more questions. And as you learn that, you're going to start to ask those questions based on what goes on. So as I go through this, I'm going to be taking a lot of breaks to say the reason I'm asking this question is this. This is what I'm thinking. So I'm not just going through and helping her solve her problem with this person and give her the next steps to do. It's really a learning opportunity for Lindsay and for everybody else in the program. So we're going to turn to Lindsay. Are there any questions or comments before we do? And also, is there anybody that wants to share some way they've been using this material with a client or with a patient or with a family member where you've gotten some results that you're happy with and you want to share with others. Or if you've come up with some kind of novel way of looking at something or tweaking a program that you'd like to share that might be helpful for everybody. So star 2 will let me know that, or you could put it in the chat or the Q&A box. I'm just going to check on the chat. I see Janine just joined us. And Michelle, there are no slides because this is a case study and a Q&A call. This is not a presentation call. So this is a Q&A and a mentoring and case study call. So there's no slides. Okay. So nobody has any that you want to share? Aha moments that you want to share? No? Okay, I'll open it up for that again, and I'm going to open up Lindsay's line. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm great.
Wonderful. Glad to hear. So you've got a nice case here, right? You've got a 5'10" woman.
I am. She is actually a good friend of mine, and we have been dabbling in this here and there, and I'm really excited to have laid out kind of a bit of a timeline and really taken a look at things in a different light and sort of put what I felt was necessary around it, but I'm sure there are probably holes in my research or how I've gone about doing it. So I'm excited to see where I might be missing obvious things. Yeah.
Okay. And then maybe that you're not missing things. It may be that you just have things that you have further learning on, and that might be a nicer way to tell yourself it, as opposed to missing or holes. So, I will interject here and there, and if you have an opposition to it, let me know. But I like to interject places where people can be more positive and limit the limiting self-talk, the limiting self-beliefs. Yeah. Whoa, I'm printing it out because I wanted to make sure if I took notes as I went along. But, boy, it's a long one. Okay, so good. It sounds like you covered everything. And here's the thing. Even if you don't present them on the call, you don't feel like you're ready or you don't want to, take this case study and fill it in for someone that you're working with or someone in your family or someone that you'd like to work with or yourself. And think in terms of, as you're filling it out, what is all the information I need to know from these people? And then you might find as you fill it, like, oh, yeah, I didn't ask that. Let me find that. Let me find these things out. And then suddenly things get easier and easier. So that's what I would recommend for everybody. And also, if you're looking to create a, moderate comprehensive form, not the fully comprehensive form, this is a good place to start with the questions that are on this form, the form submission. So feel free to use that to fill it out. And if you want to be using it, fill it out and download it. You can't download it because it's an automatic form, right? But you can fill it out, or you can just fill it out with A, B, C, D, E, F, G on it just so you fill it out and then print it. So then now you have a copy of the questions and you can think through them in terms of formulating your own stuff or have them handy if you're talking to somebody, at a cocktail party or your family member at the Christmas gathering or whatever. So I would like to start with you telling us a little bit about the person. And the way you tell us about the person is typically it's, XYZ age. So it's like X-year-old female, male, presents with blah, blah, blah. So starting with what they're presenting with, like what's their chief complaint? And I'm giving you this format because this is the way I would like you to learn so that you can actually create communication with their other people on their healthcare team, whether they're working with a doctor, a nurse practitioner, a PA, a naturopath, acupuncturist, whatever. They may be working with somebody else that if you want to collaborate with that person on this case, that you have a certain format. And that format is also included in the certification section because that's the format that we ask you to present your case. So if you can give it a whirl, tell us about this person.
Yeah, so I it's terrible. I don't have her age.
You have a 28? Oh, you wrote 48.
Oh, okay. No, it's because when I submitted my case, for some reason I got an error message, so I wasn't able to. I'm not seeing what you're seeing. But at any rate, so I didn't have the age. But basically, her chief complaint is she.
Okay, so I'm going to have you practice it, though. I'm going to be picky about it. I'm going to have you practice it, and the more and more I have you do that. So give me a second, because I'm going to go to my inbox, and I'm going to send it to you.
Okay.
Because that your email is there, onewholesouls@gmail.com.
Yep.
Okay. So I'm going to send you that. Okay, copy email address, and then I'm going to go forward, and I'm going to go like this, onewholesoul@gmail. Make sure it's spelled right, because if you didn't get a copy of it, onewhole soul, S-O-U-L, @gmail. Okay,
yep.
So I'm going to just send that to you, so you'll watch your inbox, and you should have it. That way you have what you told me, and you'll know that in front. Okay, so start with, I have a... You wrote down 48. Maybe you don't know her age, but you wrote down 48-year-old female, 5'10", 160 pounds, presents with.
Okay.
Or maybe even go a little further. 48-year-old, because how I would do it. 48-year-old female. She's a freelance art director, creative director, 5'10", 160 pounds, presents with, and then you can tell me more about her.
Okay. So presents with pain on the right side of her lower body. It's mm-hmm. in her lower abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
And it flares up after she eats. The pain itself travels back down around her lower ribs, and it radiates down her hip and her leg. And it becomes worse at night. It often can wake her up at night, and it becomes more painful if she sleeps on her right-hand side, and obviously painful after she eats or a bowel movement.
Oh, after a bowel movement, not – okay. Good. That's a key thing.
Oh, pardon me. Nope,
before.
Pardon me. Yes. Excuse me.
Okay. Okay, before a bowel movement. Okay, good. Because that would be a different thing, but before a bowel movement – and it comes on. So here's where I'm going to stop and say, okay, so how long after she eats does the pain come on?
Well, the pain, she said, is typically because she suffers from a whole host of other, quite a few other digestive issues, and obviously I think it's in conjunction with probably the pain in her side. So because it's very acute pain before a bowel movement. So you're saying how soon before she makes a bowel movement is the pain?
Mm-hmm. No, how long after she eats is the bowel movement, is the pain?
Oh.
So first of all, the way it sounds, presents with pain on the right side of her lower body, the lower right abdomen, it flares up after she eats. So it sounds to me like it's present all the time, and that's an important piece to always know and think about. Is it present all the time and it gets, okay, so it's present all the time, but it gets worse. Okay, so it gets worse, present all the time, and it gets worse before she's going to have a bowel movement and sometime after she eats. Good idea to find out how long, but that's not as critical here, because here's why. So you're talking about somebody who has a constant pain and it's aggravated by eating. The location of it is the lower right abdomen, seems like it's, somewhere near that ileocecal valve, my guess is. So the ascending colon. Yeah, the ascending colon. So I would really do want to know, like, what happens? Is it, like, immediate? So if it's immediate and somebody gets a pain in that lower area, it gets worse right after eating, shortly after eating, within an hour, then my guess, I'm thinking, and I'm just not guess, I'm not diagnosing, I'm just guessing based on what I know, and this is where I want you guys to start thinking, is, oh, so there's the gastroileal reflex that hits when food hits the stomach. It opens up the ileocecal valve. Food starts to move out of the small intestine into the large intestine. And she's feeling it on the right lower side, which would be right there around where the early part of the large intestine is. So as I'm doing something like this, I'm making notes that say, you know, like question mark before it. Is it ascending colon, ileocecal valve, right? So just kind of questioning what that might be based on what you're saying. Okay. And then, but the pain is on her side and it goes around the back, right? Around her lower ribs and radiates and then radiates down her hip and leg. I'm really thinking this needs to be evaluated for a neurologic and structural kind of problem.
Okay.
Okay. And especially because she says, you say it's worse when she lays on her right side.
Yes.
Okay. So I'd be asking this person, have you had an examination by a doctor, a general practitioner, a neurologist, or a chiropractor who would be looking at the neuromusculoskeletal system?
Okay.
Okay. Now, I'm just going to throw in a couple of other little key diagnostic tools, and that we can't call them diagnostic tools, evaluation tools for you. And anybody that's on listening, when you have a pain like that, that radiates down and it's there all the time, that's why I'm thinking it's not just digestion. The digestion aggravates it because there's pressure there. She may actually have perfect digestion. It has nothing to do with it, but it's the excess pressure of the stool starting to move into that area that's causing it. So that's one possibility. But you want to find out when there's pain like that, is it aggravated by certain positions, which you already said when she lies on her right side? But what about certain movements? Like if she twists, if she bends, if she leans backwards? Because that's again going to go, oh, it's more likely to be a neuromusculoskeletal kind of thing. Right? And the reason I throw the word neuromusculoskeletal is because the word radiates. It goes down her leg. And generally, if it's a musculoskeletal only pain, it's right in the area where there's an injury or an inflammation. Whereas if it radiates, it could be neurologic.
The interesting thing about the onset of this pain that I probably should have mentioned to you was because she does have quite impaired digestion, which we'll get into eventually, but she was on a trip in Portugal and with her family, and she was having a terrible IBS flare up. It was awful, and she went to a pharmacy there, and they gave her a pre and a probiotic to take, and it cleared her up really, really good for the rest of the trip. However, it was after this treatment that the pain showed itself. So again, I don't know. I think it's great that because she has had, she has done a colonoscopy and she has done all these things and nothing is showing up in any of the tests that she's done. So again, I think the structural component is a really interesting one as well.
It's something to explore for sure. And especially you said, well, she went on a trip to Portugal, she got this thing, but after that, like it wasn't immediately after that, it was after she returned home, or was it several days after?
No, it was like it cleared up her bowels, and then again I would have to check the exact time frame, but I think it was maybe like, I don't know, anywhere from 5 days to a week after she had taken this treatment that they gave her, that she started to notice this pain, and it hasn't left her since then.
And the pain was just pre and probiotics.
Yeah, that's what they gave her at the at the pharmacy there.
Okay, so good pharmacy, by the way, not giving her some kind of pharmaceutical. That's great, and that happens in Europe a lot, but not here, unfortunately. But here's the thing: I would also say she's maybe attributing that to it, and this is great detective work, right? Because you're looking at all the different things that might have happened leading up to something, and that's part of the taking the history. And I think it's listed in that three page or whatever history taking thing. But I always like to look, I always learned it to look at the OPQRST, right? The onset, the palliative, and the provocative, which you are giving me, right? What makes it better? What makes it worse? I don't think we talked about what makes it better, but we certainly talked about what makes it worse. Q is the quality, and you described it as acute. And I would ask you to define, does that mean sharp, or does that mean like deep and I don't know. I guess that's what I want to know what you mean by acute. Because acute is usually related in medical terms, right? Acute is related to the time frame of the onset. So acute pain is I just walked down the stairs and I tripped and I banged my toe. And now my 3 days later, my toe's hurting. Well, that was an acute pain because it happened as a result of something and it's only 3 days old. But if 6 months later, I'm still complaining about that pain, even if the pain is still sharp, it's not an acute pain. It's a chronic pain.
Okay.
Make sense? Okay.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not picking on you at all. I'm just trying to, I'm trying to teach because I think that using the right terminology. So when you say acute pain, do you mean it's a sharp pain and it's constant or is it a dull, achy there and it gets sharp when she has flare-ups?
And I think it's more than more like that, the latter one. Like I think it's always there and then in a dull sort of achy sort of way and then it flares up in different times, obviously, like at night when she sleeps on it or before a bowel movement. And but yes, it would be good to get a better understanding of that.
Yeah,
sure.
Yep. And how long ago was this? You said Portugal IBS when?
Yeah, so she went, I want to say in August.
Okay.
Yeah.
A few months ago. Not something she's had for a long time.
No.
Okay. And so you also said IBS. Is that something that she wrote down here too? The patient presents with chronic digestive dysfunction and suffers from diarrhea and or constipation. So how long has she had this IBS diagnosis or self-diagnosis?
Her pretty much since her very young years. Like I'm going to say since her teens.
Okay, so chronic. She's had, so that's what I would call chronic problem, right?
Right.
This problem I probably would call more of an acute problem because it's only been there for a few months, right? This isn't something, so this pain that she's experienced is more of acute or what we'd call subacute. It's not quite chronic yet. It's only been like 4 months, 3 months, whatever, August, September, October, November. No, it's only been 2 months, right? That's more of an acute problem, but this IBS is a chronic problem because she's had it since she was a teen. You get the difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking for different causes. So the IBS, we'd have to go way back to look for causes. And we're going to look at big cause that currently might exist is diet, stress, right, sleep, et cetera. So we'll come back to that in a minute. Okay, so you see what I just did there. We went, and there's certain things you always want to know about when somebody presents with a problem and you want to help them with, whether it's your mom's sister or your neighbor or your cousin or a formal client that's paying you. It's like, what's the problem? When did it start? How long has it been going on? What was happening right before it happened? Like, what was the situations? And you did a great job of telling me that she had this IBS flare-up, and then she ended up with this problem a couple of weeks later. But that issue when you said she got pre and probiotics, that doesn't necessarily match with the presentation. Like, pre and probiotics don't generally cause this sort of presentation. So I'd be looking at, you know, we just want to dig more, right? We just want to dig more. So in terms of, she might have actually, she was on vacation maybe she did some hiking. Did she do a slip and fall on the plane? Was she sleeping in a funny position? Did she, you know, slip on something and injure herself? So we just want to, not at a point where we can say that this pain is digestive in origin or a root cause, or if it's the problem with musculoskeletal. But here's the thing. She has an underlying chronic gut stuff. So she may have an issue. She may have a situation where whatever this other thing is, let's just say it was some sort of an injury and she's got maybe a herniation of a disc or something like that, that the kind of symptoms she's seeing when she eats or has to have a bowel movement wouldn't be an issue if her gut was in good order, right?
Okay.
But because of the gut being out of order, it could be aggravating a musculoskeletal situation. And we do see that a lot because of the pressure in the gut. And if she's going through a constipation period and she hasn't moved her bowels in a while, her stool might be hard and compact. That would be something that would press on some of the shared nerve, and we would get a referred pain. So that's another possibility. Okay? So there's a lot of possibilities here, and we still don't have enough to know.
And I think I vaguely remember her telling me, I didn't write it down because it was just something we said in conversation, but I think she was on a boat and may have slipped or something to that effect. So I'll dig in more there. I'll ask more questions around that. Yeah.
Okay. So the other thing, and I don't know if you watched any of the stuff that led up to this class, we were giving like a free training beforehand, and there was a form that I gave out, and if I can put it on the site, let me just make a note of it and ask Lynn if she can make a note of it too. It's a history-taking form that we laid out, and it just showed when you're taking a history of something, how you categorize the stuff that led right before it, the antecedent circumstances, the back history, the current history, the quality. So I'll see if we can find that link. It's just a PDF document and put it somewhere in the bonus section maybe of the site or in the assessment session. Actually, the assessment section would be the best. Okay. I'm making a note for myself for that. The third problem you listed is anxiety. Started 4 to 5 years ago when she was under a tremendous amount of stress. Symptoms are cyclical, and she definitely feels it's hormone-based. And when you say it, she feels it's hormone-based, that's something I'd want to know more about. What does she, when she says it's hormone-based, is it because it's worse at a certain period of her time around her period, part of her menstrual cycle?
Yeah, well, she is every time it kind of flares up, it's the same time every month, and she goes to her acupuncturist, and he does work on her, and so it does sort of have this cyclical. I don't know if she's premenopausal or not.
So a good question here, and I'm going to tell you how certain things they tell you triggers other questions. So with her, since she says it's cyclical, you want to know what part of the cycle because of the different hormonal influences there.
Okay.
Okay? So you want to know, is it the first half? Is it the first 10 days? Is it the middle of it, or is it the end?
Okay.
Those are three distinct.
Yeah, I feel like it's just before her period, but again, I'm not 100% sure, so I'd want to double check that.
Okay. Yeah. So these are things to check. So I'm not asking because I think you know the answer necessarily, but these are the kind of things you want to ask people as you go through.
Okay.
And wouldn't it be helpful to have a checklist of all of these things, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So good. Are there any questions from anybody else that you can think of that need to be asked in order to solve this question, this case? We're not going to solve it. We're going to say, what's the next steps, right? So we've already given you some. Let's see. Okay, let me see if there's any things in here. I have a suggestion to add a consent form to share their labs and other info. Yeah, so what we do is we speak about them anonymously. So you're not allowed to put a person's name on here. And if you're sharing labs, that you need to blank out their names, or probably we should have you complete a consent form that says you have their permission to do it, to share it. But otherwise, you really do need, if you're sharing labs, you really do need to put to blank out their names so we don't see it. Let's see. Paulo, what about appendix? Ileocecal valve can't be far away from appendix, right? The ileocecal valve, you're totally right, Paulo, is right there near the appendix. That's right, exactly where it is. So we can think about appendix, and the appendix generally it's an acute, like, you know, but it could be an appendix that's getting inflamed. So that area, when I talk about the ileocecal valve area and that lower part of the ascending colon, that would encompass the cecum, the appendix, and the ileocecal valve. It's great. And great, Paula just put up there, so you may want to share this. This might be a good thing for everybody, is how to manipulate your ileocecal valve. Great. Let's see, mind massage. Okay, so right now, you guys are jumping to solution. And before you jump to solution, you want to really get an understanding of what the process is. So these are great suggestions, by the way. A checklist of all the questions to ask, the real details, like we do that in our NEPT program in the history taking. We have, like I said, 12 hours of modules and lots of checklists in there. Pain on the right side of the body, the lower right abdomen. Okay, that's it. Okay, let's keep going. Okay, you ready to keep going? Is this helpful?
Yeah, okay, absolutely. Good.
All right, so just in summary, we have a 48-year-old woman, so she might be perimenopausal, right, at that age, 5'10", 160 pounds, so she's approximately a good weight. I'm not sure the exact numbers at 5'10", but 5'10", 160 doesn't sound too far off to me. So would you perceive her as a little bit overweight, a little bit underweight, or just about right?
No, I think she's just about right.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, so we don't have weight to consider. She's got a couple of kids. And the key piece is out of here. She presents with, she has basically an acute onset of pain that started in August, after a vacation in Portugal where she had an IBS flare-up, and the pharmacy prescribed pre and probiotics, which relieved the IBS. Within about a week or so, 5 days after that, she developed this pain, which is in the lower right side of her body, the lower right abdomen. It travels around her back to the lower ribs and then radiates down her hip and leg. It becomes worse at night and often wakes her up at night. It becomes more painful if she sleeps on her right side. It also flares up after she eats and right before she has a bowel movement. She has a history of chronic digestive dysfunction, IBS, since she was a child, suffers from alternating constipation and diarrhea. And she also has anxiety, which started 4 to 5 years ago when she was under a tremendous amount of stress. The symptoms are cyclical. We're not sure exactly what part of the cycle, and that's something that we want to find out. And she gets acupuncture to help relieve that. So, anything else we need to know about her that you know about her that we should know that might be related?
You mean like what my feeling or just like actual?
No, actual symptoms or like history kind of. She's also got, well, she gets chronic migraines. She has the right shoulder pain. She burps and has reflux after she eats. Was there anything else there? Because we always want to find out those things because they'll have their focus on their main complaints. But we're going to ask them a little bit to elaborate and to go a little bit further and do. I like to do symptom checklists and just go, okay, boom, boom, boom. What else might be going on?
Okay. Yeah, no, I would just say something that is interesting is that her grandfather was celiac. Back then it wasn't called celiac, it was like they had a different name for it. So yeah, I don't remember what it was. It was like a long kind of drawn-out name.
Okay.
But I probably have it written down somewhere. Yeah, so I mean that is something that I thought was kind of interesting.
It looks like you laid this out. Sorry, I asked you this, but I'm looking here and there's a huge history. So I'm going to just let everybody know this. You did an awesome job at this, by the way, Lindsay.
Oh, thanks.
Yes, you did an awesome job. So here she goes. I asked about, you know, surgeries, accidents, major illnesses. So she writes that from baby to toddler. So at 2 years, her family moved from New York to Montreal. She got pneumonia and was hospitalized. was just after her brother was born. And I'm going to write a note there that was probably she was given antibiotics if she was hospitalized for pneumonia, most likely. So I'm going to just say antibiotics. Okay. All right. So that could be one of the early on triggering factors, correct? Make sense? Okay.
Yes.
So adolescent to teenager, she had motion sickness. Her parents were smoked a lot. So now we have exposure to secondhand smoke. She got sick every time they would drive down to the farm. And later she would get sick in any mode of transportation, airplanes, boats, and anything except walking. And I always like to think of the full picture, but when somebody's exposed like that, she would get sick from the smoke and she associated it with motion, and that could have translated to motion in any other places because the brain kind of puts these things together. Oh, look, we're moving. Oh, I'm sick to my stomach. I'm sick in this car, breathing all the smoke, but not perceiving. And then it goes, oh, now we're moving again, right? So that's something to keep in mind, right? This nauseousness that she's getting. Now, it could be a vestibular problem, an inner ear problem, a gut problem. But that's like, I'm always looking for what are these kind of clues that there's something interesting happening here. 8 or 9, she started getting cold sores, okay? So that's, what virus is that usually?
Herpes virus.
So she's got that. So she's got a chronic viral thing. She's probably exposed to, you know, her mom gets them too. It's not generally hereditary. It's contracted. So, if a mom can easily pass it on to their kids by kissing their kids, right? So, and then she would get them from times around her period if a cold was coming on. And that's pretty typical for the herpes type thing, where the stress aggravates it, exposure to UV light exposes it, et cetera. Then she started getting plantar warts, another viral. So she's got some issues with chronic immune imbalance, right? Because she had the pneumonia when she was a kid. She probably got antibiotics. She started getting herpes. In her teens, she got plantar warts. They start getting bigger and bigger, and at one point it was the size of a heel. Holy cow. It took 3 tries for the doctors to remove it. Slow and steady scraping method that worked. Okay. And then you said she has her first day of her periods were extremely painful and would feel sick to her stomach. So there's a clue too. And is that something that's been happening from very beginning or just more recently, the periods?
A clue towards overall hormone imbalance, would you say?
Yes,
or?
Yes, okay. Definitely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, early signs. So if she's, ever since she started her periods, they were like this, this is saying that the menstrual imbalance has started real early on. But if it just started in the last few years, then, and the headaches, you said, or the anxiety started about 4 years ago. So I'm wondering, did the painful period start around the time when she started to get the anxiety just a little before, or has that been something that's been going on ever since she first started her cycle?
Yeah, that's from adolescence to teenager years. So that's basically when that started. And I don't know the duration of the extremely painful periods, but
Okay. No, that's good. That's good information because it's different to know whether it came on suddenly, it came on later in life after a particular stressor, and the underlying cause of the menstrual imbalances would be from like an adrenal stress and burnout, or if it's something that's, you know, been there from the time, from the beginning. Okay. And the other thing you want to think about is if somebody has menstrual irregularities and problems just from the beginning, it's not necessarily that they were born with bum ovaries, but you want to look at what are the other things in terms of their digestive tract. So we're always going back to digestive tract or blood sugar. And in this case, right, because she had very young, she had pneumonia, what'd she say, 2 years old or 4 years old?
2 years old.
2 years old, yeah. So very young getting antibiotics, which she most likely did, right? Everybody that gets put in the hospital with pneumonia gets antibiotics. It's just, I think that's a done deal. So early on she had that, and that predisposes people to immune imbalances pretty much the rest of their life. You know, unless you take that kid like if you had a 2-year-old and then mom suddenly learned about nutrition and diet and microbiome balancing and all this stuff and changed it around, she could prevent it. And most likely in these cases like this, she might have prevented her whole litany of symptoms by having a mom who knew about probiotics and started feeding the kid right from 2 years old, much less likely to develop this whole litany of stuff. But it all kind of compounds over the years. Oh my, here's another one. She was a vegetarian from 16 to 18, but that's not what I meant. It's that at 19, she went to Cuba and got a terrible UTI. Several rounds of antibiotics, didn't go away, traveled up to her kidney, hospitalized for 10 days, bombarded her with all kinds of antibiotics, and severe IBS during university. Fine one minute, the next thing needed to poo, stat. Had to locate emergency toilets. Oh my God, that's horrible. All right, so she's had a long history of immune problems, would you say?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Extreme motion sickness. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say my feeling is that there's a real imbalance and a real sort of dysbiosis going on in there, just based on all of, you know, all of the exposure to antibiotics she has had for the beginning part of her life.
Right, right. And the fact that she was in Portugal a few months ago and this flared up and the probiotics and the prebiotics helped it, right? So balancing the microbiome got her out of that IBS.
Yeah.
She's got a lot of she had a strange skin condition that was like tuberculosis in her 20s and 30s. Swollen ankles, liquid in the lungs, another immune deficiency disease, hospitalized for 3 days, bad relationship. He kept playing mind games, kept getting the UTIs, constantly on antibiotics. So her 20s to 30s were not good for her. And then the insomnia started, he said, another flare-up at around 28. So she was her late 20s when that happened. Yeah. What I missed was she started smoking at age 15 and smoked until she was 28. So there's another big, huge stress. And then at 29, started running and doing yoga regularly. Still has an overactive bladder. Waking up to pee several times. Well, no kidding with all those UTIs, right? There's some irritation and inflammation that may not have, that may have even created scar tissue. So another flare-up of IBS in her 30s where she was hospitalized, blood in her stool, but no, to see if blood in her stool. And then she started to consciously live clean. So this was in her 30s or late 30s? When would you say she started to eat better?
About her early 30s.
Okay, so early 30s, she started to eat better, exercise 4 to 5 times a week, had her son, which is an emergency C-section, so there goes intervention again, anesthesia, and whew, probably antibiotics too, because that's what they typically do when they do surgery, is they do prophylactic antibiotics to prevent you from getting, so over and over again, second child, vaginal delivery with epidural. Now we're in her 40s. 3 years after her daughter was born, she lost the baby weight, barely drank and ate a ton of veggies, legumes and nuts, but very little meat. I wonder if there was, it would be nice to know during that 3 years if she had less flare-ups and she felt better.
Oh, yeah, I guess, yeah, I'll ask for that.
Right. And then it says, 2012, after spending several weeks shooting on farms for work, she has chronic diarrhea. Stool is liquid, and that water is almost clear. She would often have a fever that would hover around 100 and relationship with dad. You did an amazing job with this history, Lindsay, by the way. So when you said, are there holes? Yeah, there's a few little things that we're pointing out that you didn't ask, and the next time you will ask, and you'll get to fill in for her. But you did an amazing job. It's very, very thorough.
Thank you.
Yeah. Her husband's had a new job, stress. So from this is from 2012 on, there's all this stress in the household. She feels like she's not doing anything right. She's not there for her kids. She's not there for her work, constantly rushing. So you take that kind of stress and you add it onto a stressed out immune system and a messed up microbiome. And that's where you get a whole lot of problems. And she started having convulsive episodes, and that was in 2012. Is that correct? Or
yeah,
thereabouts?
This was, yeah. Well, yeah, I think it was.
Wow.
I just want to see. she had a situation in 2015, but I think she would have these little convulsive episodes where she would almost go to, she explained it to me, like she would be sitting there and she could feel her head drop and then like her body would like go into little convulsions and then she'd come back from it. But she did have a scary episode in 2015 where she woke up and everything was spinning and she went to go to the bathroom and she fell and she was unable to get up and she was vomiting all morning and she was obviously rushed to the hospital. They gave her, again, different medication, something for viral, something for anti-vertigo, and it took her like a few weeks to recover from that episode. So I that's it. I think everything that you kind of just hit on there in terms of a messed up microbiome, her immune system being really out of balance, and then the added stress of everything just,
ongoing. So they never found anything to explain. They did MRIs or EKGs or other brain scans to make sure she didn't have a tumor, that she didn't have, you know, any swelling or hematomas or anything like that.
Oh, I believe they did the full gamut.
Full gamut
on her. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Got it. Okay. The ongoing motion sickness still. She's being treated regularly with acupuncture. She's got bowel movements that run from liquid to constipation. They're just never right. The motion sickness is now ongoing. It impacts her skiing, especially on gray days with flat light. She had to start taking gravel before going out. Otherwise, she vomits on the hill. Wow. So there's a lot of systems involved here too, right? There's her brain, her neurologic systems involved. She's got her gut, she's got her immune system, and she's got her female hormone system. There's four major systems that are having issues here.
Okay.
She started, I don't have a date here, but it says menopause starts slowly, and she's dissatisfied with her job. She's stressed to the max. She's got these kids. She's got a husband that, you know, lost his job. She's got a couple of kids to take care of. She's got jobs at dissatisfaction, and now she's she stopped doing yoga. So is this recent, this stuff here? It doesn't have a date, but, oh, it says it's after December 2015.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what the whole thing you described.
She's in
a, since
she's
then.
She's in a much better place now, which is why she's really trying to focus on, you know, getting her body back,
getting
basically.
Getting her body back, yeah. And is she still on the anti-vertigo medication?
I think she only took that, for the spell, or if she's like going skiing or doing something like that with her family.
Okay. So then during that period of time, she gets less careful with her diet, eating more bread and sugar, has a drink a night to come down from stress almost every night. Alcohol also affects her sleep. She feels the acid, when she wakes up in the middle of the night. Insomnia, she falls asleep okay, but she wakes up in the night. She quits her agency job, and this is 2015. This is great. The way Lindsay did this is she just presented it as a timeline. She just went through, which is really great. This is exactly what's helpful to do, is to create a timeline for folks. Okay, just a second. My stool just squirted out from under me. I'm going to stand back up. Okay, so so in 2016, the diarrhea becomes chronic. She has got brittle, splitting nails, ridged nails, hair loss, feels nutrients not making into her body, right? Have you done the nutrient assessment with her to kind of pinpoint it, the questionnaires that we gave?
I did, and I didn't, unfortunately, print those off for tonight's call.
Okay, if you know what they showed up, that's a good thing. You know, to take that and just use it as a summary. It looks like she has you know, a high percentage of scores for this nutrient, pretty good on this nutrient. Those are good things to know. We don't need to know that for now, but I just want to go through this process. But the splitting nails, you know, ridged nails, hair loss, I'm thinking protein, I'm thinking zinc, silica, some of the other nutrients that are involved there. And if you don't know what all the symptoms are of these nutrients, like nutrient deficiencies, it's a good thing to study, but you can actually get it from that questionnaire I gave you. So you can be looking at, okay, these are the symptoms we're looking for if they have a zinc deficiency or if they have a whatever deficiency. It's not a complete list. It's just major symptoms, but at least gives you some starting point. She's getting a change in her eyesight, dry eyes. Progressive lenses to watch her son's game. Wow. So that, and this is around the age that this thing starts, that the vision changes start. So that, but the dry eyes, not necessarily. So she sounds like she needs to put drops in her eyes every twice a day. That's starting 2016. Overall change in fitness. Used to be able to run 8 to 10K regularly without much effort. These days, 5K is challenging. So it's like her whole, she's just like, she's feeling it. As she gets into this time frame of menopause where everything's shifting, her body's feeling the brunt of these stressors that have been on it for many years, for like, you know, almost half a century. Her weight goes up and down 30 pounds. So right now she's at a good weight, but throughout her life she's had these ups and downs with it. You know, and with that, we think about microbiome, we think about bloating, we think about gas, but, you know, it's dietary indiscretions and also blood sugar imbalance. So you want to make sure that you're going to consider blood sugar imbalance. Very low blood pressure, low resting heartbeat, and adrenal imbalance. Okay. So one of the key signs of adrenal imbalance is that low blood sugar, and it gets even lower when you stand up. So that dizziness, some of that vertigo, it could be an adrenal dysfunction. I think I just said blood sugar. Okay, so we want to be looking at some of these other things to go through cause. Oh, she went through menopause with very little trouble, maybe 4 hot flashes, tops and no real mood swings, just insomnia and heightened anxiety. Well, that's good that she went through it easily, because I wouldn't have expected that with this. So she is through menopause. And so those headaches, if she's still getting the headaches, or those headaches subsided since she went through menopause, or are they there more? So that's a good thing to find out.
Okay.
Yep. She had a colonoscopy, blood work, and stool analysis. 6 days after the colonoscopy, the pain on her right side was very extreme. She woke up in the middle of the night, and between 4:30 and noon, she had 4 substantial bowel movements that were almost solid for her, ribbon-like. Pain continued throughout the day, diarrhea at the end of the day, woke up twice in the night to go, pretty violent again the next morning. Does that mean fine again the next morning?
No, pretty violent again.
Oh, it got again. Okay, got it. Again the next morning, yeah. Not digesting sugars well. What does that mean?
I'm not sure if that means like fruits or, again, I don't know. I know that she does like to have a glass of white wine or something bubbly every night. So I don't know if that's what she was referring to. She's not a big, she doesn't eat a lot of sweets. So I'm thinking it's either fruit or that drink that she has at the end of the day.
Okay. All right. That's, good thing to ask, though.
Guess.
And you're going to want to do a diet history on her. You're going to want her to do a 3-day detailed diet log.
Okay.
Okay. And I would call it a diet and symptom log, just to say, you know, how are her bowel movements that day, and see if you start to see patterns.
Okay.
May not get it with 3 days, but...
Yeah, I do know sometimes when she has, you know, for instance, the other night she went out to dinner with her daughter, and it was her daughter's birthday, and her daughter didn't like her plate, so she switched with her daughter, and the plate was a bowl of pasta, and she had a terrible reaction to it, which is why I was thinking of, you know, the potential there for celiac. But I just think her system is probably so inflamed that the things that she already has sensitivities to, you know, I think it makes sense that she's reacting that way. I mean, I do feel terrible for her, but...
throw in a recommendation.
Sure.
If you go through the processes that we lay out in terms of healing the digestion, it always starts with an elimination diet. So this person may get dramatically better if she eliminates these foods. If she gets off of gluten, first of all, anybody with this kind of digestive history, anybody with IBS should be off of gluten, sugar, and dairy 100%. You have to work with them if you have to transition them, but we're not looking for any, what do they call them? Okay, so we learn in medical school, if you hear hoofbeats, think horses, not zebras. Okay, we're not looking for zebras here. There are plenty of horses. Okay, so she's got a lot of stress, right? She's got a lot of digestive stress, right? She's got a father who is celiac, or grandfather who was diagnosed with celiac. She gets aggravated when she had her daughter's pasta, but she has digestive issues. She has IBS. Everyone with IBS needs to come off of gluten, dairy, and sugar, at least for a period of a couple of months.
Okay.
Okay? It's an elimination diet. So I go back into the materials and find the elimination diet, which I think is in one of the very early modules. Right?
Okay.
Because it's step one. When you're going through and trying to heal somebody with digestion, you're looking at, like, you can do the four R's. You can add a fifth R. Remove. What is remove? Remove is remove the things that are aggravating. Remove. Like, all the digestive irritants. If you look right at the beginning, you're going to see a big list of digestive irritants. Get her off all of them. And if you have to slowly transition her, great. But that's the starting point. We got to remove the irritation. Somebody's getting hit, they have a headache, and they're constantly hitting themselves over the head with a hammer. You better remove the hammer and see if it goes away, right? So this one isn't going to be, I think she could probably get some major changes. Yeah, she's had a messed up microbiome and immune system her whole life, but she's been eating gluten her whole life. She's been eating sugar her whole life. She's been eating dairy her whole life. She drinks alcohol. And likely she hasn't been from the start on a diet that was loaded with veggies and nothing, no processed food, no sugar, right? She wasn't on that. None of us had that ability.
No, and you're absolutely right. And I will say, though, that she does eat they do cook a lot of they are doing a lot of whole foods. Her preference is veggies and fish over like a meat diet any day. So there is, you know, she's definitely not somebody who's eating tons of processed foods or junk foods or anything like that. I think it's like you said, it's just about finding the right foods for her.
Exactly. But the thing is, like, through her life, she wasn't on that kind of a conscious diet.
No.
Right.
No.
So she did the life up till a certain point that she was on this horrendous diet. Now she has to go from a point to super strict the other direction. And it's great that she loves to eat just vegetables and fish. You put her on nothing but vegetables and fish for, you know, a month. Off of all the grains, off of all the processed food, off of all the wine, off of all the sugar, off of all the bread, the pasta, and everything else. Right? That's the start. So when we're trying to help somebody's digestion, remember those seven pillars, right? We have to look at building back those seven pillars. The stress, the external stress, she can't do anything about, right? She's got the job issues. She's got the family issues, whatever. But
things are much, in that regard, though, now things are much better. She's freelancing and she's loving
beautiful.
It. And
beautiful.
Yeah, like, so that whole side of things,
beautiful.
The stress is, yeah,
much better.
More,
right.
Yeah.
So let's look at getting her diet under control, and let's look at restoring that microbiome.
Okay.
Right. So she's had some stool testing. So she stays away from raw. No kidding. She probably has to stay away from raw because her gut it sounds like it's pretty darn inflamed.
Yeah.
Right. So staying away from raw. What I would recommend, sometimes what I recommend with people like this, of course, you got to get them off those irritants. So all the digestive irritants, they go away. And then I would say have her just blend her stuff for a while. Like give her 3 to 5 days or a week on just blended foods, because it takes a while for the small intestine to turn itself over. And if you make it real easy by blending, there's no
soup and things
like making soup. So I like an easy way is just steam up a big pot of veggies, take the water from it, put it in the blender, put the veggies in there, blend it up. You can add something like a fat that she tolerates well, whether it be avocado or coconut or some soaked almonds or walnuts or hemp seeds. There's any number.
Right.
To give it that, it holds it together better, gives it a nice flavor, and then some seasonings, whatever seasoning she likes. And that's a big bowl of a hearty soup. And that kind of thing is going to be soothing. You can look at the list of herbs that soothe and heal the digestive tract. Look at that list, right, and say, oh, why don't you try this and why don't you try that? Let's make you this healing soup. Go into the recipe guide that we gave you for it's on the consumer side of it, the Grand recipe guide. It's an awesome recipe guide, and there's a healing broth recipe in there and healing vegetable soup recipe. So start to get her to do some of those gut healing recipes to heal it. So there's the aspects are you remove, right? So you have to remove the things that are hurting. You want to replace. So you want to replace what's missing. Probably some enzymes could be very helpful in helping her to break down her food. All right. And then replacing nutrients with high nutrient dense foods. So when you blend up a bunch of lightly steamed vegetables, the nutrient density in there is phenomenal. It's super high, right? And that's going to help her to get that stuff in there. The enzymes are going to help her to break it down and get it into the system because she's got those nail things, she's got the hair things, probably not getting her protein and her minerals absorbed real well, okay? And you can look at the chart, look at what you got from her, the vitamin A, the C, the E, whatever, and then work on that. So I would take her through, I would honestly just take her through the program, you know, one step at a time. So if you go into the grand program that we gave you that I teach to my clients, get her through those processes. And if she's already doing it, great, check, you know, but then you can't skip steps, right? Because we do it from top to bottom. Now, the breathing and appreciation, grace before meals, heart math, meditation, whatever, but before she puts food in her mouth, get her body ready for it. Because she's been in this sympathetic dominant state for a really long time.
Okay.
Yep. All right. She's had blood work, you know, so it sounds like she's had a lot of things looking for problems, right? Looking, diagnostic types, tests, looking for those zebras. And she doesn't have them. So that's good. There's no tumors. There's no masses. This is all good. Right. So it's functional. It's been happening since she was 2 years old, probably, and it's time to turn it around, and this can be turned around. I know this can be turned around. Yeah. Seen this kind of thing over and over. So she's taken some good, so she is taking probiotics right now. She's taken some ACV, holy basil, great, oil of oregano to clean out her gut. It may or may not, what I find is a lot of people get desensitized to oregano. When I do stool tests or I have students submit their stool tests on their clients, we see a lot of people are resistant to the oregano. So if she's going to do any antimicrobials, she says Clostridia difficile. One thing for Clostridia C. difficile, there is a particular probiotic that has been found to be more effective than others, and it's Culturelle.
Culturelle, okay.
So you might want to look into that. All right. But if you're looking at getting rid of a bug, she's got some bacteria. She's had a lot of viral infections over time. I would do rotating antimicrobial herbs rather than just doing oregano.
Okay.
So you can look at, you know, there's a whole bunch of them and just read them up in that section of the program. There's a whole section on the antimicrobials. And just like read through them and see what's best for her and rotate.
Okay.
Okay.
And you would suggest doing those as like teas or,
you know what,
or actually
however
like
you can get them in there. You can do tinctures. I like liquids. Teas can work. Some of the ones you'd have to do a lot of brewing. Like it sounds like she's busy, and making teas is going to be just one more thing on her plate of things to do.
Okay.
So tinctures can work really well. Some of them can come in powders, but the ones I would look at as potentials are berberine. I don't know if she has a parasite, but just in case, you can try some artemisia. You've got the oregano. I'm trying to think of one other that can be really helpful. Berberine is, you can also do Oregon grapefruit. Berberine is an extract from Oregon grapefruit and golden seal. Artemisia, grapefruit seed extract. Grapefruit seed extract, possibly it's a little potent. And go through that list. You know, the best way to do it, to choose some herbs for people, is to read through the descriptions of the different herbs and see what other things it covers. Like you might read one and go, oh my goodness, look, this one, like ashwagandha, wow, that's really good for sleep. Wow, it's also good for thyroid problems, and it also can have some liver detox problem effects. That's a good one for that person. Because you're not going to put them on every herb, right?
No.
You're just going to pick a few, and I would say rotate them so that she doesn't get sensitive, desensitized to them.
Okay.
Okay, antivirals, look at things like isatis and echinacea. Those tend to be good antivirals as well.
Okay.
Okay. Tart cherry juice for sleep. And are those things helping the ashwagandha and the tart cherry juice?
I think they were for a time. I don't know if they are anymore. I also don't know if she's been consistent with them. So she found she was using that and that was working, and then I think it wasn't as effective, and then so she was using holy basil, which she really liked. And so she's definitely you know, she's also being sort of proactive about trying different things too, which is awesome.
So you always have to give things a long enough time. And you can rotate them or you can do them in combination with each other. So if you find that one thing seems to take the edge off, but it doesn't completely, don't take them off of that. Just add something to it or rotate it with it. But sometimes things work in synergy with each other. But it's really getting to the underlying cause. And if she's got a lot of stress, the kind of testing you might consider for her in the future would be adrenal stress testing. And I would look at anybody who has all that brain and all that imbalances. I'd look at blood sugar and just get her to get a blood sugar meter and start testing. That might be not be one of the immediate steps, but this could be a long-term step.
Okay.
Okay? So that testing, and I would have her evaluated musculoskeletally to see if there's some muscle imbalance, some spinal imbalance there. I'm trying to think of the right word, subluxation. And
what was that you just said?
Subluxation, spinal subluxation. That's the chiropractor would be able to assess that. Seems like there's something musculoskeletal maybe. I mean, it could be referred pain from the colon, but because it's there chronically, I want to make sure that, and it's worse when she lays on her right side, that could be pressure, but it also could be that there's some musculoskeletal that has to be ruled out.
Okay.
Okay. So here we go. Dietary. Let's see. So she's walking 3 times a week. That's great. She's got that stress under control. Now here's the thing with stress, and people say, well, I was stressed, but now I'm not. I'm good. I don't have to test my adrenals. But I've seen situations where people are under massive stress for a long time. And then they just like, okay, now I'm going to the beach for 6 months. I just, you know, one person in particular just sold my company. I've gotten the money. I'm out of that stress. I'm just going to go on the beach and recover. And went on the beach and recovered, but came back and redid her stress test, and it wasn't all that much better until she started to address it directly. So that's the thing. Okay. So it's yes, that the stress, de-stressing is super important, but there may be some rebuilding of the adrenals that would need to happen. Okay. I would say vitamin C, but you can't to be very careful with vitamin C unless you do liposomal with somebody with IBS because it can aggravate it.
Okay. But the lipo, that particular kind you mentioned would be okay for her?
Yep.
Or
yep.
Okay.
Liposomal vitamin C. It's more
okay,
a lot
yes.
more expensive than regular, but the vitamin C generally, it can be aggravating for somebody with IBS, so you have to go very slowly with it. Not to say not to do any. But the amounts I would want to do to rebuild the adrenals would be like 3 grams a day. And I think that I would be very careful about any kind of other buffered or even ascorbic acid with somebody with IBS.
Okay. No, I did just get some of that vitamin C a few weeks ago. We were talking about my gums, and so you mm-hmm. had introduced me to it for that reason. And they're actually doing a lot better.
Good. Good, good. That's good to hear. Yeah, that stuff can be pretty magical. So she still has some bad habits. You're going to have to work on that. Coffee's not a good thing for somebody with IBS to be having until it's healed up, and then she can try it again later. Gluten, 100% off. and the wine, I'm sorry, unfortunately. So it's really chatting with her about, let's just do a program for 2 months to get this under control. And then you can test things back in. But I wouldn't put gluten, I'd keep gluten out for at least 6 months and probably never go back to it with her history.
Yeah.
And that's, she's the kind of person that if you want to do follow up just to see, I would do some sort of gluten test, whether it be the EnteroLab stool test.
Okay.
Or the Cyrex Labs Array 3 gluten test, or there's a new one called the Wheat Zoomer, which I have, don't have any experience with, but Tom O'Brien loves. So you can look into one of those. But the reason is when people are going, well, I don't eat much gluten, it can't be that. No, no, no. It could be that, because it could be as little as a, like a little crumb coming off of a crouton that somebody put on your salad and you said no gluten and you took it off and ate the salad anyway. It can be as little as that that can flare things up for 6 months.
Okay.
And it's documented. So she just has, that's, I, there's no doubt about it. She has to get off the gluten, and I'd get her off the wine and the coffee as well. Okay. Introduce her to some substitutes, right? So coffee, what could she have instead of coffee? What about getting some cordyceps mushroom and making it a tea? There's amazing things that you can do that will support her adrenals, that'll support her kidneys. So here's the thing. She had bladder stuff that goes up into the kidneys years ago, but she has lung stuff. Why not get her on cordyceps, which is going to support all of that and give her stamina, right? So I do cordyceps, like a teaspoon of cordyceps in a cup, and then I put like a couple of tablespoons of coconut milk powder. You don't have to do that. I like it that way. Or she can just do that, make a tea. She could add a little bit of coconut milk or something to it, and then a little drop of stevia if she needs it for flavor. It's amazing, and it's just really supportive of all the things that she's dealt with.
Okay.
And it's great immune support as well. The other thing, I would look at some of the other medicinal mushrooms also, because she's had this immune suppression for so long that we just want to build it up. So reishi, look into reishi mushroom. There's this company we're looking at now, and they sent me some samples for our upcoming Shine conference, and it's called Mushroom Mama. And to make it easy on people, they have the little blends all put together. So they have an immune blend. They have a stamina blend. And you just put in boiling water and you make these teas out of it. Makes it real easy to do.
Okay.
So I would look at
very
that.
Cool.
They look very high quality. Okay. So stress level, good that she's down to a 4. The only medication she's on is Advil, and that is for what?
I'm not sure why she takes the Advil. Maybe for, I don't know, actually.
Ask. Anytime somebody's taking an anti-inflammatory, over-the-counter anti-inflammatory, ask. Because you said she was getting cyclical headaches, but her periods are no longer there because she went through menopause. So what's, or not headaches, that was anxiety, never mind. Yeah. So ask. I would ask. Why is she taking it? And is there something she could take instead? Because all those NSAIDs are gut and irritants.
Yeah.
Okay? Okay, so we talked about dairy. She's got dairy sensitivity, but she still has water twice a day, right, in her coffee.
Milk, you mean, yeah.
Milk, dairy, yeah, right.
And I've been trying to, like, slowly introduce her to things like, you know, cashew milk or coconut yogurt or different things that we can, you know, we can replace with.
Okay. All right. Work on that. I work on the enzymes because you're saying tomatoes, grape skins, and raw vegetables come out whole. So she's number one, not chewing, because if they're coming out in big pieces, it means she didn't chew them well enough. But she's also not digesting. She's not breaking down the cellulose.
Okay.
Right? So the digestive enzymes and chewing. Chew.
Do you have a specific enzyme that you recommend, or just a good one from
there's some good ones. I like transformation enzymes. They're more potent than the ones at the health food store. Lynn has some others. Maybe she can write them in the chat. She has some others that she likes, but I've just had really good clinical results with people on transformation enzymes.
Okay. Okay. I'll look into that.
And I haven't researched recently. Once I find something, I'm not going to go check out every new company. So there may be some better ones, but these are the ones that have done well for me.
Okay. Awesome.
Okay, so she's had some toxic exposures. I'm not convinced that toxic exposures are the cause, but that can be a contributing factor, right? So she's had, she renovated an old house with stripping paint off walls. When was that?
Oh, boy. That was, oh, gosh. I want to say at least, I'm going to say 7 years ago, if not more, somewhere in that time frame, though.
Right. Okay. So she's not currently doing that. She's not currently exposed. I mean, that could, add to the toxic load and add to some liver stuff. Travel to South Africa. She could have picked up a parasite. The other test that you can put in your to-do, potentially, once you get some of the stuff, I would get the basics straightened out before doing any other testing.
Yeah.
Like, really work on getting all the basic stuff out. But doing a comprehensive stool analysis, like Doctor's Data or Genova Diagnostics.
I thought of that, yeah.
Yep. And you can see what they show if you go to that bonus module we gave you with the detailed assessments and a whole bunch of case studies in there.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because you were talking about one type of stool test that actually that tested like four times or four different parts of the intestine, or I don't know. It was a
might have been something different, but this one basically tests for your good flora, so it tests all of that. It tests for yeast. It tests your parasites. It tests the pancreatic function with things like pancreatic elastase. And if you watch those videos, I explain what all those things are.
Okay.
Let's see. So your assessment is prolonged gut dysbiosis from a lifetime of antibiotic use, absolutely, negatively affecting hormone production and function of nutrient absorption. So gut stuff, dietary and stuff that's aggravating as well. Probable intestinal permeability, yes, creating a wide range of problems throughout the body. Probable gluten allergy due to current state of dysbiosis and family history. Multiple kinds of medical testing with no results, absolutely. So plan. In-depth stool analysis will contain microbial makeup. I would say number one would be the beginning elimination diet, okay, and remove all allergens. Replace allergens. Number two, I'm going through your list. You have all this down. You did a great job. You did an amazing job. Replace allergen-containing foods using a personalized diet with nourishing, easy-to-digest foods, including pre- and probiotic. Before I do this, I'd like to understand the state of dysbiosis to incorporate the right strains. I think at this point, you could do.
Just have to.
I think you would just, do the foods, do food-based probiotics, and then get that stuff going. Here's the thing. If she has unlimited funds and she's willing to do the stool test now and then another one in 3 months, then go for it. Go for it. Because you know what? You're going to get some leverage with her if you see things out of balance. But the definite remove all, if you think you need leverage in order for her to get some of these allergens out, go ahead and consider one of the stool tests. The Intero Labs is a good one because it's inexpensive. It's a stool test. The one with the Cyrex sets of blood, you have to have been eating gluten regularly for the last 3 weeks when you take it.
Okay, because that's what the doctors, the medical doctors, were going to do a test like that for her, a blood one, and she said that to me. She said, I have to be eating gluten in order for them to test me accurately, which
it's horrible. I don't want to do that.
Yeah,
I know. That's why I like the Intero Lab. Because think about the stool. You've got these IgA-type antibodies that are just hanging out in the mucous membranes waiting. They're just hanging out waiting. And as soon as they see something come down, they're attacking. But they're still there. So they're going to come out in the stool. And I've seen much more accuracy for people, especially people who have been off of it or mostly off of it for a while, in the stool test than in doing the blood. Now, the blood test that her doctor would do would be just anti-gliadin antibody. They don't do the 20 different fractions of it that the Cyrex does. So if she is going to eat gluten in order to get this test done, then I would have her do array 3. But I'd rather her not get eating more gluten because she's going to just make the problem worse.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm going to relate that to her too, because I had that feeling too when she told me that, and obviously, you know, it's I mean, I know she doesn't know, so
no, she doesn't, right? That's your job to educate her.
Yeah,
and you've got, I mean, the materials you've got at your disposal. I put my heart and soul into that program because it's got everything in there. Including advanced stuff on how to look at, so that the advanced thing from Steph, like, okay, customizing probiotics from Steph, that's a bonus, right? There's even that, like how to customize the probiotics. So there's so much stuff that you have at your disposal. Begin with the elimination diet, remove the allergens, start to replace the foods, and then you can look at, you know, get her to do that for a while, and if you can do the stool analysis, but that's what I would go. She doesn't seem to have signs of SIBO, so I wouldn't be concerned about the probiotics and being so careful about it as far as, you know, not aggravating a SIBO condition.
Okay.
Okay? Was this helpful?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. So helpful.
Okay. Awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, good. It's so good. I mean, the really refreshing thing, too, is obviously as somebody who is, you know, I'm not new, but, you know, you kind of question yourself a little bit, so it's nice to have a forum where we can kind of go into detail and dig into all these things, but then have somebody like you to bounce it off of who's thinking of these things differently. And I also really like the part where you ask at the end of all of it what we would do as a protocol, because it's just nice to have that sounding board and, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, so here's what I would recommend for you. I'd really, you know, just review back into everything that you're learning, right? Really feel comfortable with it. I would redo this case and resubmit this case as your case study. And then you can add the additional information, write it up in the format that we give you. And then you can go further with, this is my 3-month follow-up. This is what happened at 3 months. This is how she fared. And if there's more complications to it, then how did you deal with it?
Okay.
Make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because you did an amazing, amazing job with doing this. I don't think I've seen anybody do as thorough a job in putting in the case study for one of these calls. So congratulations. And you hit it. You even came down to, what am I going to do? And you hit everything I said to do right there. Right?
Yeah, no, I guess I just needed that piece of that piece of confidence before because theoretically I felt like I knew what we needed to do
You got a few distinctions with those herbs, right? Some of the herbs and the rotating and, you know, some of that stuff you didn't think about, but other than that, I mean, I think you did an amazing, amazing job. So.
Well, and the structural piece was a huge thing, too.
The structural piece, definitely look into that, because I think there's something structural going on, and that's the acute symptom, right? You put that as her top complaint. That's an acute symptom.
Yeah.
That's just been happening for a few months. That's not her real problem, right? But that there's something that's aggravating that, and since they've ruled out whether it's a tumor in her bladder or any of those places, and it's not anything like that. They did stool scans. It's not IV. It's not Crohn's disease. It's not polyp. I mean, there's none of that stuff. It's not something growing there that's pressing. So I would look at the musculoskeletal for sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. I want to hear from other people. Was that helpful? Do you have questions about it? Pop them in the QA chat. Raise your hand. Was it helpful to go through that? Okay. I don't see anything there. Let's see what's in the chat. Lynn says yes. Yeah, Janine, I'm going to say, why do you think a low FODMAP diet? Okay, I'm going to go back through once this stops. I'm going to go to the bottom, and then I'll go back. This is as good. Okay, good. So those of you who are not already signed up for Shine, I'd highly recommend you look and come and join us. We're going to go through a lot of lot of good stuff. We're going to do some cases. We have some of our students in NEPT presenting some cases, one case on autism, another case on severe blood sugar diabetes problem and complications with that. Another one with another one on some hormonal imbalances accompanied by GI stuff. So looking at some Dutch test stuff. And we're really going to give you some great tools for helping you to figure out and customize the diet. So I want to hear more from Janine on why a low FODMAP diet, because that's not something I see for this case at this point anyway. I mean, we got to get her off the main stuff, the gluten and the dairy and the sugar and the alcohol. Okay, so let's see. Okay. And Apollo picking up appendix, right? But again, it's not an acute thing, but it could be some aggravation there, but there's so much more going on here, as you probably heard. That was an early on one. Let's see. Okay. So Janine was saying how a chiropractor was opening the ileocecal valve and the pain was horrible, and on CT scan it showed she had calcification in the appendix. And Lynn asked her, what are you doing? And she said, green drinks. So green drinks are great because what you're doing is liquid green, or what I said to Lindsay was to really just eat the lots of greens blended and really be careful with the raw greens with people with IBS. You want to get them on the raw green nutrition because there's so much value there, but when you have them eating a lot of salads, it can actually aggravate them. Yeah, so she's got all this stuff that came about, started when she was 2 with pneumonia, and of course the antibiotics that come from that. So Lynn and Paolo were talking about pneumonia related to EBV, herpes. She's got the herpes. She's got the pneumonia. I wouldn't be surprised if she had the EBV as well. Okay. Somebody was asking what's Gravol, and it's like Dramamine. It's for nausea and motion sickness. Yeah, so Janine, if you want to comment on why you're thinking, what your thoughts are behind a FODMAP diet. High-dose vitamin C, Lynn, you know, she definitely needs that for her immune system and immune support, but you got to go carefully with vitamin C. Like I said, liposomal, yeah, but you got to be careful with other forms of C when there's IBS because it can aggravate. Berberine from Origins is a nice mix, Janine says. Let's see. Dawn says, what are my thoughts on wormwood for parasites? I like Artemisia annua. Wormwood is usually Artemisia absentitia. Artemisia annua has less toxicity. Wormwood you have to be careful with, but it can be excellent for parasites. So if ever I use wormwood, I just use it for short periods of time, like 2 to 3 weeks, and monitor the doses. But you want to be careful about liver toxicity. But Artemisia annua is very good. Let's see. Dawn says ashwagandha at bed works good for her. The nutritional Health Force Nutritionals Scram worked well for Janine. I've had good people with that. The reason I like that Scram is it's got the Artemisia, it's got a little bit of wormwood, I believe, but it's got liver support in it, and it's got black walnut seed in it. Andrina says visceral manipulation, stomach, liver, intestines. That certainly is, you know, something to consider as well. And I would start with getting some structural evaluation, and that could definitely be helpful. Visceral manipulation is like it's an offshoot of craniosacral therapy where you're actually manipulating the viscera, the organs, and looking at the attachments where they attach in via ligaments. And you've got the sacrouterine ligament, which is where a lot of people have their sacrums out of balance, and it's yanking on that ligament in the uterus. So you've got to look at it from a bunch of different places. Janine says cordyceps. Astragalus can be good for the long-term immune system, but if she gets an acute flare-up, you've got to stop it because it can aggravate acute flare-ups. And then Oregon grape works well for them. Mushroom mama, M-A-M-A, is what I was talking about, the thing. It's really actually good. And I looked at the tea containers, and they were like $13 on their site, so it looks really good. Daniela says maybe the NSAIDs were prescribed for the radiating pain. Not that we agree, but of course, yes. We got some really nice samples, and I had to pull out one of each type, and I've tried two or three of them so far. And the mushroom mamas, and they're in these little samples are in these little containers, and you just put it in a cup of water, put the boiling water. A couple of them, they recommend you put them in the blender and put a little bit of coconut oil in and blend it up, and maybe a little stevia, and it gives you a nice hot tea that's very medicinal. Yeah, these were not very pricey at all, Janine. I thought they were very reasonable. The containers are these metal containers, and it has a little sticker on the top in different colors, and it says, let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food, which is where we go. And they're like, I think they were like $13 if you just go mushroommama.com. I think they were like $13 for those, so it's very reasonable. Let's see. Anybody else helpful? Other ideas? These are great. Thank you for sharing your ideas. Yeah, I mean, she mentioned FODMAP because of the IBS, but also rebalancing flora. And it's possible, Janine, that might be something that she would be benefited by, but I think she has to start with getting rid of all the allergens and the irritants. And if that doesn't work, then the next step would be, okay, what other things could she be sensitive to? FODMAP's a very restrictive diet, and no, not everybody needs to do it. So I like to start with the rest of it. That's good. Zinc, of course, zinc. That's what we talked about, looking at those mineral analyses forms that we did and see if she has signs of zinc. But zinc's important for the digestive tract. And it's usually not involved with much with processed food, but it's also one of those that are hard to digest and absorb. So zinc could be a good possibility too. Helps to make stomach acid, helps to make digestive enzymes. Okay, so good, great. You guys are thinking. I love it. And all of these things are great ideas. So we can move on if anybody else has questions. I don't see any others typed into the QA. Here's it. Janine says, male, 56, mechanic, has a stint 5 years ago on 2 heart meds, aspirin, statin, eats out at a nice restaurant every day, and trying to order heart healthy. He wants to get off statin. So I gave him Mitavin, and showed what, I don't know what Mitavin is, and showed that he's been depleted by meds, explained GMOs, oil, et cetera, suggested CoQ10 and vitamin E. Right. And then, the healthy diet, if he's eating out, it's really hard to eat healthy because they aren't conscious about the oils. So eating in restaurants, unless you're just ordering the steamed vegetables and salads and guacamole if they have it, it's really hard to eat really healthy if he's doing that every day. So, but those are great starts for him. Are you asking me some?
Mitavin is like a calculator. It's it's for your nutrients.
Okay, so what does it do? What do you do with it?
It's
you put food in and it tells you what the nutrients are?
Right. That's my understanding. I remember reading about it. I should look it up again. But that was my, it calculates your nutrients, your medications, things like that.
Okay.
So you can see if your medication is, or whatever you're taking is causing you troubles.
Yeah, so whenever you're talking to somebody like this who has a serious heart condition, he has a stint 5 years ago on 2 heart meds, you got to proceed carefully and you got to tell them absolutely you are not allowed to get off your medication unless your doctor says so, because you don't want to be in a position where you're saying things that could cause harm, but there's so many great references and resources for eating well and reversing heart disease. There's the Caldwell Esselstyn's book. There's Joel Kahn's book on, he's a cardiac, he's a vegan cardiologist up in Detroit area. You've got the Dean Ornish book. They have studies and studies and studies on that, the combination of food with meditation and yoga. So there's a lot of really good stuff out there on heart, and it really starts with the good diet. And we just be careful about eating in restaurants because of the oils that they use, who tend to be processed oils. It can be problematic. Did you have anything to add, Lynn, about that case or any other cases?
Let's see. I was going to go back because I was looking at it. For some reason, the first thing that popped in my head when you were talking about stints was hawthorn berry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, yeah, making a tea or a tincture or something like that could be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so again, you know, little bits like that, we can give you little hints and clues, but what you want to do is go through and really look at the whole picture.
Right.
The whole picture.
Exactly.
Right. It's not just what herbs should somebody take when they're on heart medication and they want to get off, and can they do it with CoQ10 alone, and you really have to do the whole thing, and which is why I recommended get yourself a few of those books. You're going to pick and choose. Some of them might be too restrictive. Some of them you might not agree with. But there's a lot of precedence there, because these are people who took the severe and the most severe of the severe that are dying of heart attacks and reversed it. Joel Kahn's, I don't know if his book has come out recently yet. He's working on it, but he's, like I said, he's a vegan cardiologist up in North. Esselstyn, I don't remember where he's from, but he's been doing studies. So,
well, and okay. You know, when I do things like when I offer something like, you know, the hawthorn or whatever, the other part of that is each of these herbs, each of these pieces, even the food, they're actually a living piece. And mm-hmm. So if you're not just offering the herb because of some generic things we know about it, we're offering it because it has its own particular life force
mm-hmm.
that is going to be helpful to it. So that's another reason I'm really careful when I offer a particular herb. That's where I really trust my intuition and the things that I've learned about it when studying them. You know, that's where muscle testing is really important, or the sway test or something.
Mm-hmm.
And just because it works now doesn't mean it's going to work tomorrow or next week or whatever. And just mm-hmm. like you always teach us, though, it's like, okay, this hawthorn might help for now, but what's going on?
What's the underlying?
What's going on? You know?
We don't want to be Band-Aid dispensers, even though we
mm-hmm.
will give Band-Aids, but that's not where we want to stop. I heard when I interviewed Dr. Tom O'Brien a few weeks back on my Facebook Live, he's going to be at Shine, by the way. He's an awesome speaker.
Yeah.
He said it's like a life preserver. You have this person, they fall into this pool of swirling water. You're going to throw them a life preserver so that they can get out. But you want to find out, like, what pushed them in? What caused them to fall in? Is this a hazard that's ongoing? Like, what is it? Like, was it an autoimmune disease that got them into the swirl? Was it, you know, a leaky gut from eating gluten? Was it a what was it? And you want to always go back and back and back and back. Yes, you want to throw them a life preserver. You want to throw them the best and the safest life preserver possible. But you're not going to leave them in the water with the life preserver. You got to pull them out,
right,
too.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And then you figure out how they're going to prevent themselves from falling in again. And that's what we want to do with it. So I recommend you really get to know how the body systems work. So this is the clinical mastery of digestion, and you want to really learn this stuff. And that's why I teach it in such extent. What do we have, 25 hours of videos in this program? It's a lot of great in-depth information. But that's just one of the pieces. So if you're going to be working with people with a lot of variety, there's more to it. So, you know, you want to look at the blood sugar. You want to look at the adrenals. You want to look at the heart, the lungs. But understand how they work. right? It's not just a matter of what protocols are there. That's not what I teach, is what protocols there are. It's understanding how it all works so that when somebody's presenting, you start to see the web of the interconnection, because they are not an organ or a gland or a digestive tract. They're a whole person.
Right,
and what are
right.
all the things that fit in?
Exactly.
And that's the importance of whole body working. Yeah. Thank you.
Right.
Good job.
What's going on in their life that on an emotional level has brought them here? You know, think about it. We're talking about their heart. Your heart says so much about how you feel about your life, your receptiveness to life. And so that's the other piece you look at too, is that whole emotional piece.
That's right. That's right. It's all tied
together. I'm thinking that's more root cause than anything. I think our body just shows us the rest
right.
of it.
And that doesn't mean that if you identify the emotional root cause and you correct it and you don't change the food and you don't, you know, you stay a couch potato and you continue to get stressed out over things just because you forgave your mother for doing something when you were six, and that might have been the root cause. You've got to fix everything in the
right.
chain. You got to really work at
yep.
repairing everything in the chain. But you can't
yep.
eliminate that emotional piece either. I have so many people that really are doing a lot of the right things. This woman that Lindsay presented, there's a lot more she could do better. But there are people who have been gluten-free for 10 years. They've been off the dairy. They're off sugar. They're off allergens. They're eating tons and tons of great vegetables or nutrients, and they're really taking care of themselves, but they're still not responding. And in that case, a lot of times it's just like flipping that emotional switch, and that's where you get dramatic changes. When they've already done the work on the physical, structural, biochemical pieces, and then you identify that emotional or an energetic block, and then boom, they get better dramatically. But they don't get better dramatically if they're still hitting themselves over the head with a hammer. I'm going to use that analogy all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
They stop worrying.
The fire
and they
won't
stop
go
running.
Out if you keep pouring the gasoline on.
If you pour your gasoline on the fire, it won't go out. So we have to do it. We have to do it all. And it takes time and it takes finesse and working with people. And for me, I find that it's hard sometimes to get them to do it. But for me, I start with people with, like, getting them in touch with their big why. You showed you how we do that in the Grand program, so model that. Because if they don't really know why they're doing it and they don't have a goal that's beyond just getting rid of their gut pain, right, then they're not going to be as diligent. Oh, I just eat gluten now and then. But if they understand the connection and how it works, and their big why is I want to go on this trip. It's a family reunion trip next year, and we're going to the Himalayas, and we're going to be climbing mountains, and I want to get to the top and take pictures, and I want to feel great about it. Okay. So abusing your body with corn swirls and gluten chips and Coke is not doing it. And I know that you guys – you know, you hopefully take people beyond that pretty quickly, right? They're eating well. You're getting them to eat, quote unquote, well. But they go to do that and they go, well, that's not going to help me climb Mount Everest. I'm going to feel like crap tomorrow. How am I going to build my body up? Nope, I don't want to do it. So it's really getting in touch with that big why. Sometimes the big why is a short term. Sometimes it's a long term. Sometimes it's, I want to write a book and leave a legacy, but I can't focus for more than 5 minutes. And I can't deal with it because I'm doubled over in pain all the time. How is this pain that they're presenting with? How are the symptoms they're presenting with keeping them from living their lives to the fullest? And when you can start that conversation early on in your relationship with somebody, that's going to help them to do the follow through, right? Because it's one thing to create a great protocol and plan for them, and it's another thing for them to actually do it. Is this all making sense to everybody? Is this helpful?
Yeah, I'm looking at the remarks and chat, and this is definitely resonating with people.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other piece to that is when we see that person, whether they're sitting across the desk from you or on your screen, like if you're the phone or however you're connecting with them, really connect with them. Mm-hmm. You know, if they have that connection with you, they're more likely to really hear you and make changes.
Absolutely.
And I know that Tony's really going to go into depth with that on Shine.
At Shine, right. She's going to go into that. I know that connection is that very first piece, you know, in our first step in anything we do. And what we teach is for you guys to get connection and clarity. And that's why we include that Inspired Health Vision thing. And you can make your own version of it. That's just my flavor of it. You can do it however you want. I'm just giving you an idea. But the point is that that connection, they don't get that with their standard medical practitioner unless they've got a very unique situation, because the way the system is set up right now, I know in England, Dr. Allie says she gets 9 minutes with her patients. Mm-hmm. The ones here, maybe they get 10 to 12 to 15, but nobody really gets to spend more than 15. And the patients don't feel heard. The clients don't feel heard. And when you start asking them these questions and really listening, holy cow, they like melt and they cry because they finally feel heard. You know, I had a feeling that that thing that happened when I was 14 was contributing, but nobody took the time to ask. And when I tried to explain, they just brushed me off. Hello? Oh, Lynn just went away, but hopefully I didn't go away. I was hearing that little background.
One of my sons just walked in the door, so I...
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't me gone.
You're still good.
Great.
Yep.
Thank you. Yeah, so that's the stuff, you guys, right? It's really that connection. They so appreciate being heard, just being heard and explaining to them, this has been here for a while. I don't have magic bullets. I'm going to be digging deep and deep and deep. I'm going to be asking you a lot of questions. I'm going to be making some suggestions for diet, lifestyle, things that you can shift, maybe some supplements, some herbs. But I don't want you to think about those supplements and herbs as the cure. I don't want you to think about those supplements and herbs as the thing that healed you. Your healer is in you, and there's a bunch of obstacles in the way, and you and I together are going to figure out what all those boulders are and get them out of your way so that you can get access to that inner healing power that you have, and nobody's going to take it away from you.
Yep. And I'm going to give my son, who just walked in, a shout out. He just did a 5K. They do them at night. They're called Glows Runs. And he came in first.
Whoa! Congratulations to him. That's awesome.
Yep. Woohoo! Yep. Well, that's good living and fun.
That's great. That's great. Lots of fun. And don't underestimate the power of fun in these people's lives, because when they're coming in and they're saying they're working 12, 14 hours a day at a job they don't like, and then they have two or three kids to come home to and take care of and feed, and their husband's not supportive and blah, 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 right? If you can give them like a minute to themselves, 5 minutes to themselves, and say, I want you at the end of your lunch break, 5 minutes before the end of your lunch break, I want you to figure something out every single day that's fun. I want you to do it. Maybe it's looking at a picture book of these beautiful paintings of places that you want to go. Maybe it's reading something just for pleasure. Maybe it's putting your feet, if you work at home, putting your feet inside the tub and getting some water, going outside in the sunshine and just like soaking it up. You know, maybe it's doing a puzzle. I used to love to do these little number puzzles or crossword puzzles or anything at all. Non-technology probably is best. That's a distraction. But something where you're actually using your body to have fun, whether you're writing or reading or listening or putting your feet in the grass and absorbing the sunlight. And you teach them to do that. And they're going to get permission, not only permission, but it's part of their plan. 5 minutes a day, and they're allowed to do more if they want to, right? But you're saying 5 minutes a day, and it can make all the difference in the world for these folks, all the difference. So don't be afraid to think outside the box and be creative and really tune in and connect to what matters most to them, and keep using those words back with them, because they'll appreciate that. Use those words back. Ah, I understand it's important to you. Oh yeah, and that's because you love the outdoors, and it's great that you did that. You know, go back to what they value the most and remind them all the time in subtle and sometimes not so subtle ways that that's what they have to focus on, and then they're going to follow through with what you know how to do. You know how to help these people. And if you don't already, if you haven't been through the whole program and, you know, they present with something that's outside of the scope of the program, you know where to get the information, right? And those of you who are in NEPT know what I'm talking about. There's a bunch of you on from there that are, you know, we have everything in there, all 36 modules. So Q&A, if anybody else put one in, no, just Janine, okay. Chat, anybody else, raise your hand, star two. And healing is within us. Yes. Yes, absolutely. Beautiful. All right. I'm going to say goodbye to all of you. I'm going to open up the lines so we can all say goodbye to each other. And let's see. On the count of three, everybody can shout out goodbye and anything else you want to share with your fellow comrades in this. So interactive. One, two, three. Bye, everybody.
Bye,
much
guys.
Love and healing. Bye. And thank
love,
you
love, love.
Love, love, love. Love, love, love. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Bye now.
Bye. Bye-bye.